Jussie Smollett, the star of Empire, the song and dance man at the Obama White House, entertaining Michelle Obama, and Tina Chen, her chief of staff, and everybody else loved Jussie. Well, he got what was coming to him. He faked a hate crime, a racial and homophobic hate crime, faked it, made himself the victim, put that ridiculous noose around his neck to suggest a lynching, and it turned out not to be true. The judge found that he lied throughout the entire trial, and so he was given 150 days in jail. It sounds reasonable to me. I didn't even think he'd get any time. All I wanted to see him was walking along the Ike with other convicts with a sharp stick and a bag picking up trash, avoiding dog scata. And I'm glad he got time. And Judge Lynn made a great argument, great statement, and explained it step by step. But you know what? Jussie started screaming. He didn't like that. He didn't like going away. And he started screaming, "I'm innocent! I'm innocent!"
"You will pay restitution to the city of Chicago in the amount of $120,106. You are fined $25,000, which is the maximum fine. And you will spend the first 150 days of your sentence in the Cook County Jail. And that will start today, right here, right now. Mr. Smollett, do you have any questions?"
"No, I would just like to say to Your Honor that I am not suicidal. That's what I was about to say.
Okay.
I am not suicidal.
Okay.
I am not suicidal. I am innocent, and I am not suicidal. If I did this, then it means that I stuck my fist in the fears of Black Americans in this country for over 400 years and the fears of the LGBTQ community. Your Honor, I respect you and I respect the jury, but I did not do this. And I am not suicidal. And if anything happens to me when I go in there, I did not do it to myself. And you must all know that. I respect you, Your Honor. I respect your decision. Jail time. I am not suicidal."
"Okay.
You're not suicidal? You're not Jeffrey Epstein, okay? You're going to be okay. Just stay in there for 75 days. Keep your mouth shut. Come out and become a big star again." But you know what? Right immediately after Jussie Smollett had his little outburst, his little hissy fit.
"I am not suicidal.
Stop laughing about our
class. I am not suicidal. And I am innocent. I could have said that I was guilty a long time ago."
Somebody else had one. Kim Fox, Cook County State's attorney. Yeah. She wrote an op-ed for the Chicago Sun-Times that ran the day after the verdict, or the sentencing, and she basically said that Jussie Smollett was a victim, and that he was a victim of mob justice. "Rather than working collaboratively to stem rising crime or free the wrongly convicted, a small group of people hijacked the judicial system to enact what is best described as mob justice," wrote Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox. And in the Chicago Tribune, there was a story right after the sentencing. Here's what she said about the sentence. "Is the restitution fair? Sure. But that doesn't feel like accountability to me. It feels like revenge." Now, I know you're a moron, but you do know how to use words occasionally. So let's say, hijacked the judicial system to enact mob justice is one. And the other description you gave to the Tribune feels like revenge. How dare you? Have you no decency, madam? Have you no shame? Of course you don't. Because Kim Fox is the person, the prosecutor, who who, after Jussie Smollett was indicted by a grand jury for faking the hate crime, getting the people all upset, bringing Chicago a little closer to racial confrontation, she bathed them in the waters of the Chicago Way and cleansed them. And she dropped all the charges, mysteriously. And what you didn't know about it was that she was speaking privately with Tina Chen, Michelle Obama's chief of staff, and other Jussie Smollett big shots to give him a break. And then she lied about recusing herself. She lied to the people. She lied, misled. Okay, you want to use the word misled? Okay, use the weasel word. Misled the people of Cook County repeatedly. And now she comes out talking about mob justice and revenge? How dare you? Judge Lynn made his statement in sentencing. He laid it out.
So I'm trying to consider who you are as a person, how you got here, how somehow you strayed away from your family values, you let that dark, narcissistic, selfish, and arrogant side come out, and you persisted with it for years on this case. I'm fashioning the following.
You want to talk about mob justice and revenge? How is this? The judge that allowed for a special prosecutor over your objections, his name is Mike Tooman, and your boss, boss Tony Breckwinkle, tried to take him out. Is that not intimidating judges? Is that not about getting everybody on your page like some boss? Like a tough guy? Like a gangster? We're talking about the courts of Cook County. And you play those games, and you walk away, and then you pronounce sentence yourself on the system after you pervert the system by dropping the charges to begin with? You have no shame, state's attorney. And maybe other woke reporters are going to let you get away with that nonsense, but you know what? I don't want to be on your team. I don't want to be on anybody's team. But when you do something like that, you undercut the notion of justice. The idea that it's impartial. You deconstruct it to the point where, well, you break it. Today on the Chicago Way, our guest is Ray Long, longtime Tribune reporter, author of a new book, perfectly timed, by the way, The House That Madigan Built, about Mike Madigan, the recently indicted boss of Illinois. Jeff Carlin is here from WGN Radio, executive producer, master of pies, lover of cats. And me, I'm John Cass, husband, father, executive editor at johncassnews.com. And where are you with Kim Fox calling out judges and other prosecutors and lawyers as promoting mob justice and revenge? You're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand with pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
And now, as promised, Ray Long of the Chicago Tribune, my former colleague, friend, and author of The House That Madigan Built, The Record Run of Illinois' Velvet Hammer. Ray Long.
Hey, John.
Hey, buddy. Did you coordinate with the U.S. Attorney's Office and your publisher to to get this thing, this book published and out right during the indictment of Madigan?
That's a Chicago way if I've ever heard of it.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on, and thanks for that opening question. I actually was upset that we didn't get this thing published almost a year ago, right? But the university press takes a while to crank it out, so they've been targeting March 22nd for months and months and months, and I don't think that John Lausch had my publishing date too much in his mind when he pulled the trigger on Madigan's indictment.
Backstory on that, Jeff, is that when Jeff and I had heard something was happening at the federal building, so we're texting everybody, you, mm-hmm. Jason Meisner, and everybody in politics. And right. Thing. What is going on? Is it Madigan? Is it Madigan? And I think I texted either to you or Jason, did Ray Long's publisher coordinate with Lausch on this? And I didn't get a response because I figured, you know, you guys were busy at the news conference. So that's your official answer, right, Ray?
Yes, that's my official answer. My official answer. Yeah, I guess if you'd had to go with it earlier, you could have said Long could not have been reached for comment there. But the real answer is
right. That's
no.
What we have.
Ray, what we got here, I got to ask you, because this kind of came up. I forgot who you and I are. Maybe we were talking to Tom Serafin, but he brought up your book and we talked about, you know, if anybody's got stories of, you know, who Mike Madigan was and really understanding how he was able to wield power and also gain the name, the moniker, the Velvet Hammer, you know, without seemingly ever yelling at anybody or raising his voice or doing anything kind of untoward. What did you got a good example or a quick story you can share with us about an example of him being that Velvet Hammer?
Well, he put the squeeze on people slowly and slowly and slowly and pounded them down, you know, gently over time until they were crushed. Right. And so he didn't need one big slam all the time. And he was not always one to come up with one big sweeping big day of legislation. A lot of times he'd whittle you down over time too, but yeah, I think it was more like because he would wear you down by constant rebuff or constant pounding on you, but you just wear away like water on a rock.
Another backstory: Ray and I were a long time at City Hall together. He was working for the Sun-Times then before he moved over to the Trib. And this story on Lori would have made our day, you know, back in the day. We would have been laughing our asses off.
Yeah, know, yeah, right? Yeah. We didn't we didn't have that much access to emails back then.
No. Speaking of which, we're speaking to Ray Long, longtime veteran Chicago Tribune reporter, covered Springfield for many, many years, and his book, The House That Madigan Built, The Record Run of Illinois' Velvet Hammer. Get this book. You can go to Amazon, wherever you get books, and get it, because this is the primer for the Madigan trial, if it ever happens, and I think it will. So, Ray, you've been mentioning emails throughout. What about those emails from Mr. McLean, Mike McLean, the Tribune?
Well, right.
You did a great story on that. You and Jason busting open the emails of Mike McLean, who was bragging to all his friends, let's help people that Mike wants us to help, because we are the, what was the group? The Trusted of the Trusted.
The most trusted of the trusted. Right. This was back in 2019. We got a hold of a cache of emails from Mike McLean that he was reaching out, trying to rally some campaign contributors who he wanted to make sure that they were given enough money to the targets in races and legislative races. Targets are the ones that are targeted for victory or defeat. They're always the toughest races, and there were about 19 that they were trying to make sure that they had enough funding for to battle out in the next round. And what we saw was McLean goes in up to this group, and I don't have the full list of the group, but he was saying, you know, you are the most trusted of the trusted, and we need to help the caucus and himself, which was, of course, the affectionate name, the Irish Gaelic name that he used to identify Madigan. And that also, as you know, when you go back into the Irish Gaelic origins of that, it's the term used over the years and centuries for the big man in the house. Right. And that seemed like it was appropriate for Madigan. But McLean would not use Madigan's actual name. He would say our friend or himself, but it was always clear who he was talking about.
But Ray and Jeff, Mr. McLean, who I had the good occasion to meet, though not at that Italian steakhouse or whatever they call it in Springfield, where they dip steak in the oil and then tell you it's Vesuvio that Ray once treated me to. I remember that. Saputo's.
Yeah, Saputo's, yeah.
Saputo's. But both men, Madigan and Mr. McLean, are co-conspirators, co-indictees. So true. I guess we're going to hear, Ray, I guess we'll hear about the emails, et cetera, the trusted of the trusted and all that stuff, all the great reporting that you and Jason have done over the years. And that's in the book, The House That Madigan Built, Record Run of Illinois Velvet Hammer.
Get a copy.
Did you like that? I repeated the title three times now.
I noticed that. I'm marking it down here.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's just to pay you back for all the quotes you use of me, you know, in your book.
Oh, you're still sore because I only quoted you once in the book. Man, oh man. I'm going to have to live with this for years.
Love you, Ray.
Maybe so you can put a blurb on the cover on the reprint.
No. This book stands as written because it is a must-read book, The House That Madigan Built by Ray Long. So, Ray, you were in before you veered off on that personal attack against me, your friend. tell me about McLean and Madigan together and how that's going to play out in the trial.
Yeah, it's an interesting relationship because McLean and Madigan go back to the 70s. Mike Madigan was in the house when Mike McLean's dad was in the house. And Mike McLean's dad died shortly after the vote on ERA in the 70s. And he had been feeling kind of bad, ill during the time of that vote, but he stuck around and then he later died. Mike McLean later took over his office. And so Mike McLean and Mike Madigan were two young Turks, one from Chicago, who was learning at the knee of Richard J. Daley. And Mike McLean was from downstate, who had learned a lot from his father along the way. And both of their fathers were influential. So they had a lot of kind of things, familial things in common. And they struck up a relationship when Madigan moved to minority leader in 1981. McLean was put on to Madigan's leadership team, and they worked closely together. McLean then lost when they did the big cutback of the House, which once was 177 members. Yeah, Pat Quinn pushed it through, and they went from 177 to 118. McLean lost out on that, went back to work as a lawyer in Quincy, and then eventually moved into lobbying in Springfield, and he reacquainted himself with his old pal Madigan and got closer and closer over the years. What we saw during the years is that McLean did not necessarily follow Madigan's idea that you shouldn't put stuff in writing. And and so we see those things about the most trusted of the trusted. We saw that McLean also had rounded up some other utility lobbyists to raise money for Kevin Quinn, who was ousted by Madigan after his sexual harassment of a campaign volunteer, Elena Hampton. And McLean had urged about five total, including himself, that we know of, to send Quinn some business on contracts of things that Quinn could do. And we were able to trace bank records that showed there were at least $31,000 were sent his way. And this, what was striking about that was Madigan was trying to separate himself from Quinn, but McLean, Madigan's right-hand man, was out there raising money for the guy that Madigan had just ousted over sexual harassment. Now, the speaker said he didn't know anything about it and wasn't involved in it, but just the idea that they were so close and one was doing one thing, trying to break away from the sexual harassment thing and trying to push some reforms, the speaker, and then McLean, his longtime friend, was trying to give a soft landing to Kevin Quinn. It just was one of those breaks in the action where you go, who's doing what? Why is this happening?
Well, one is the front piece, right? The political piece, and the other is the real political piece, right?
And sometimes you're trying to figure out which is which.
You're right. Pick up this book by Ray Long, The House That Madigan Built, The Record Run of Illinois' Velvet Hammer. And I just want to say, Ray, that in the introduction, I mean, not even in the introduction, in the dedication, to know who Ray Long is, let me read it. To my parents, Scott and Elizabeth Long, and my sister, Marilyn Mayberry, whose support and love have inspired me from the day I was born. And a special dedication and thanks to my life partner, Peggy Boyle Long. We fell in love in the Capitol press room. A former State House reporter and magazine editor, she shared invaluable insights as this book took shape. Classy, Ray, and nice.
Well, thanks. I mean, they're the people who mean the most to me, so I thought I should dedicate it to them.
I don't understand how you could fall in love in a room where Paul Liss was directing traffic and smoking his cigar and talking like he knew everything. But a true love is going to be born wherever it's going to be born, right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, there were several offices there. So
right.
Paul wasn't in all of them all the time.
Ray Long, thanks for being here in the Chicago.
Thanks, Ray.
Thank you. It's just great. I really appreciate you having me on. Thanks again.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Ray.
For Ray Long and for Jeff Carlin, executive producer at WGN Radio, and the reason we do this podcast, and for me, John Cass, husband, father, editor-in-chief of johncassnews.com. We'll see you again next time on another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN+.